on in. Welcome to Real Estate Right Now, where we talk about real estate matters that matter to you. My name is Jay Izzo, and we are live here from Lindercraft Team Realtors in Raleigh, North Carolina, and we have a fabulous show for you today. You know, we have not yet had a home builder with us to talk about new homes, right? And specifically, you know, the home builder that I have today, John Finan, who's with Finan Homes Building.
Exeter Building Company.
Exeter.
No, that's totally good.
Right. I know it's Exeter, and I don't know why I didn't do that.
I just didn't do it. I got the good logo here.
That's right. I'm like, oh, yeah, Exeter Building Company. It's right there on your logo. Pay attention. So he's going to join us today, and we're going to talk about new homes. We're going to talk about generally, you know, what's going on in new homes in our current market. And then we're going to get a little bit more. We're going to move into the luxury home market because I know that interests so many of you. And so we're going to talk with John. So first thing I'm going to do, John, welcome to Real Estate Right Now.
Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk generally. So right now we know that the, the Triangle Business Journal came out and said that homes were like down 30%, you know, I think mostly resales were down. And we're seeing a little struggle in inventory right now. How has that been for the new homes? I know you deal mostly in luxury, but I know you also talk to builders and all sorts of...
Sure.
What are they talking about in terms of this market and new homes?
Well, first, let me dispel the notion that the market is bad or soft or anything like that. It isn't. I mean, we are so fortunate to be in North Carolina.
Right.
Statistics I saw over the past 4 years, 4 million people have migrated to North Carolina as a whole.
Yeah.
Then you get to the Triangle, 40,000 in the past 4 years, new businesses and families have moved to the Triangle.
Wow.
And then you get to Raleigh, 64 people a day are coming to Raleigh.
Wow.
So it's a lack of inventory right now.
Right.
There are no homes, and people don't want to sell their existing homes. So the resale market is, you know, they're like, I can't go somewhere with the interest rate I have right now. So they feel sort of locked in. They've got the handcuffs, right? And so they're trapped. And so the gap between resales and new construction is about as small as I've ever seen it because there aren't that many resales. And so, and the new construction just can't keep up, right? We're not up there. So there just isn't that much inventory out there. So if you look at how much inventory is available and the absorption rate in the marketplace, it's actually, the market is really doing really, really well.
Right.
And like I said, you know, there are a ton of reasons why people are coming here. It's amazing when I talk to customers all the time why they want to be here. Some of them are safety, right? You know, they come from places where crime is an issue and they love it here. Access to a smart and educated workforce, right?
Yes.
Great schools here, a nice climate. It's centrally located. And so, you know, as long as we continue to see people coming to Raleigh and to the Triangle, I think the market here is in super shape.
Yeah, I think the market is in great shape. The inventory, of course, is low.
That's the thing.
Inventory
is low.
So from a home builder's perspective, right? I mean, because you're building new homes.
Yes.
And so how does these market changes start to affect you as a home builder? I mean, I imagine it's got to be good for you. But, I mean, I guess I'm thinking more in terms of, is there more pressure on you to build faster?
Well, of course. And you know, the time it takes to build homes has lengthened. I mean, it really has.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, you know, so for a while it was really supply chain from COVID. You know, it was a little bit as a builder playing whack-a-mole. You know, normally you'd order windows a few days before you needed them and they'd show up on the job site and you'd go. And then all of a sudden they're like, no, your windows will be here in 6 months. And so you have to change. You know, builders have had to change the way they do business. You order things much earlier in the process. Before we start the house, we're ordering your windows. We're ordering, you know, your appliances. You're ordering their cabinets really much earlier than we ever had. So it takes a little more planning. And and if you don't do that, then you're going to be stuck in this wait until the pieces you need show up to build the houses. So, and then availability of skilled craftsmen. I mean, there's enough demand here that it's hard for these people to keep up and to deliver. Finding great craftsmen who can build quality homes and help you build homes is always something that you're working on. So those two things have elongated the process it takes for us to build the homes that we really want to deliver to our customers.
So, okay, so then we still are seeing a little bit of a supply chain issue then.
Yeah, but you know, it's nowhere like it was. I mean, you know, but it is sort of surprising. All of a sudden you'll find out It's the ducting for your HVAC system, or it's the meter bases that you need for a house. You know, for a while it was always appliances and windows, but a lot of these things are caught up. And again, it's really just keeping your finger on the pulse of what's going on and talking to your partners and your vendors and understanding what's coming and planning. And so I think that's one of the things our company does real well, is we're really on top of the relationships we have. We don't call them, you know, they're not contractor sources. These are our partners.
Sure.
So I think having those relationships with these guys so that you're communicating constantly, helping them with their business, they're helping you with your business, is super valuable and helps to, you know, helps us kind of get keep ahead of these problems. And, you know, as far as building homes, it's elongated, but we're still, you know, build a normal home that's without a basement in under a year. And, you know, that's not terrible.
So how long has Exeter been building?
So we're coming into our eighth year.
Okay.
You know, this year we'll build somewhere around 18 to 20 homes, somewhere around $40 million. So you can sort of quickly do the math.
Right.
And so we're clearly in the luxury space of the marketplace. Right. You know, we're not competing against the nationals.
Sure.
And so we don't build a ton of homes, but we're big enough that, you know, we can have some leverage with our trade, you know, partners and work with them and have them tied to us, because we really try to communicate and share with them so they know what's going on and they can be part of our team.
So let's talk about luxury home differences.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really important for people to understand that, you know, there are these major builders that build a lot of homes, hundreds, thousands, all over. And then you're building, you know, not nearly, right? A small percentage. What is typically when people go, what's the difference between what you do versus a larger mega builder? What is the difference?
Yeah, there are a lot. But, you know, a simple one that I always think about is if you're building with a national builder and it's this plan that they've done and they've done it 100 times, the electrician can just go in there and he gets the box labeled Plan B. And he knows where every switch is, and he knows where every wire is going to be, and it's just done, right?
Right.
He doesn't have to think. You can do it on in your sleep.
Right.
You do a custom house, the customer is going to say, you know something, John? I'd like a light switch under every window of my house, because I'm going to put a decoration for Christmas there, and I want all those switches to be run by the side of my bed so I can flip it and turn it off when I go to sleep at night. It takes, you know, so you're, I have a Roomba. I want to have it underneath this little cubby here, and that's going to be the place for my Roomba. I've got the Dyson vacuum cleaner. I want to hang it in the closet. I need an outlet there.
Right.
My electric toothbrush. I don't want it sitting out of the counter. I want it in the closet here, so I need an outlet here. I've got a watch collection. It needs to be, so, you know, electric is just a really simple one.
But it's customization.
It's customization. It's being able to get what you want. It's to have a dream, a thought, a vision of what your home is going to be, and us executing by partnering with the customer and doing it. So we build some of our homes, I call them signature homes, where our team designs them and builds them. And so somebody coming to the marketplace from California starting a job in 30 days, they need a house, and we deliver some homes that are beautiful, but it's our design and our team making the selections and picking it. But other times, and we do a great job, I think we're experts at pre-sales, is we meet with the customer and we walk them through the process. We say, hey, you know, what do you want? What are you picturing? Oh, I need a wine feature. I need a steam sauna shower.
Right.
Those are things you're not going to get from the national builders. Those are the things that in our space that are expected and people want, and we have to work and help them do it. Mm. Now, you know, the more complexity and the more changes and things you do, the longer it can take. And so why do our houses take a little longer than a national builder? It's because they are very custom, and we have to partner with the person who's building the home. And so that's what we do.
Well, and then I'm thinking about luxury. Let's talk about luxury for a second in the luxury market. What have you seen in our current market when it comes to luxury? Are you busy? Has it slowed down? Is it still moving forward? How are you seeing the luxury market right now?
Yeah, no, it's still very busy. And, you know, I think it will continue to be people coming here from other markets. While, you know, when you live here locally, you're like, gosh, it's expensive and things have gone up. But when you compare us to other places, ours really is, you know, fairly reasonable in some people's minds.
Right.
And I think the other thing is people are investing more in their homes. They're worried about, you know, the stock market fluctuation. And real estate, it may go down for a day or two, but it trends up if you look at the history of Raleigh market.
Yeah.
And so real estate is still considered a great investment. And I think people who move here are thinking, hey, I'd like to take, you know, I've made some money in the real, on the market. I've made some money in my job. Right. I'm going to take that money off the table. I'm going to invest it in my home. I'm going to make my home my Disneyland. I may not travel to Europe four times a year anymore, or twice a year, or to the, you know, to Florida, but I want my home to be special. And I think after COVID, people really did value having a space that they felt really comfortable with. So they're asking for things that they feel they want in their home. That's going to make them enjoy living in their home. And they're investing in their homes.
And I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I'm guessing though, you know, since post-COVID, we have a lot more people working remotely. And I'm guessing as part of what's maybe changed for you in the luxury market is that home office, and maybe not just one, but maybe a couple of home offices built.
You're spot on. The people going to the office, everybody's planning for what they do at home. Right. We've built offices with two desks in them for kids to study. And then you have a separate office for the dad to do it.
Right.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of our younger buyers are opting not to do a traditional formal dining room. And instead, they're turning that space into an office or a, you know, a bourbon tasting room or something like that.
That's popular right now.
Yeah, oh, gosh. Yeah.
The bourbon like
wine rooms,
right,
bourbon rooms, right, tequila tasting.
Right. Yes. Right.
You know, so you were seeing things like that instead of a traditional dining room. And the rationale is, look, I've got a bar that has tables and seats at it. I've got an eat-in space off the kitchen. Why do I need three places? I'm only eating one of them in a day. And so and we're seeing a lot of people use a larger kind of communal area off the kitchen for an eat-in area, and then the bar, and foregoing that. But the home office or a pocket office, we're seeing a ton of pocket office with special lighting, just to people doing Zoom calls, right? You have to have the good lighting and stuff. So they'll have the light there that's giving them the correct lighting on it, and they'll have a desk there, and it doesn't have to be a giant space, but they want that. Other people want the more traditional office bookcases and stuff like that. But offices, two offices, his and her, they both work at home. Yeah, a ton of that. The other big trend I think I see in the luxury space is, you know, we've shifted over time from, you know, smaller rooms, you know, compact rooms to these larger open floor plans.
Yeah.
But the downside of the open floor plan is all of your mess, if when you have it, is on display.
Right.
And so we're seeing a trend of having these scullies or these overly large pantries, hidden doors or separate rooms, where you can put your coffee machine and your toaster and your mixer and your pizza boxes and your takeout Chinese food, but it's not out in the main room where everybody's living and seeing.
Got it.
And so you have your mess kind of parked away where it's a little less on display. So we're seeing a big trend on that on the homes that we're building.
I'm this is the first time I've ever heard anybody talk about these little pocket offices, basically having your own studio.
In your
home. I have a studio in my house, but I've had to build it as part of, you know, a larger room is what I did for my studio. But that's a great idea because we're doing so many more Zoom calls. We're doing so many online calls, having that little pocket space.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be, a giant space, but it's a place you can duck into, take a meeting, a call, have the right lighting in there and make it productive for, you know, people working at home. So, I think that's a very, very, you know, common trend that you're going to continue to see.
Now, open floor plans have been, you know, been trending.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
For quite a while. I mean, for at least 15 plus years.
Yeah.
They've been more and more. Does that present difficulties building, especially with the larger homes? Does that present some difficulties with the larger open floor plans?
No, it doesn't. I mean, you may have to run a little more steel into it, but, you know, these open plans really allow you to have sliding doors that go out to indoor-outdoor living. So that's the other big thing I think that, you know, you're seeing people really want is they want to extend their living space from not just their family room kitchen area, but out onto their porch and their screen porch, out to their patio and out to their pool. And so a lot of people are adding pools. And so the open plan is great, but I think having these places, these sculleries and pocket offices where you can hide and do things that are not just all on display is kind of the shift that we're seeing. You know, I think when I look at older plans versus today's plans, the tall ceiling, 11-foot tall ceilings and big windows and larger staircases and wider staircases, those are all things that, you know, sort of, if you don't have those, you timestamp yourself from a build from you know, two decades ago.
Right.
And so the new plans all are starting to see that. You know, there are a ton of great builders in this marketplace. And I think as you look at new construction, you see more and more of people incorporating those things into it. But the open plans are still loved. But, you know, I am seeing I call them baby chasers. It's a demographic of buyers that we see here. So many young couples live here in the Research Triangle Park area, and they work in technology, and they're starting families and having it here. And the grandparents are getting older, and the kids are all here. And so they chase the grandbabies. Once the kids have grandkids, the parents move here. And they want sometimes a little more traditional, a little smaller, and a movement to not as big a home, maybe a smaller home, but very, very fine finishes in the home. So cost per square foot much higher than traditional home, because they don't need a huge house. You know, they would love just a ranch, and but they want it nice. They don't want a 1950s ranch. They want the tall ceilings and all the things, the open plan, but they want it to be really nice. And so that's definitely a trend we've noticed lately.
Technology, speaking of technology, we're so digitally connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to believe that even in 8 years that you've been around, making our houses more connected has got to present some, I don't know if it's challenges, but certainly is a absolute part of every house now. I mean, I remember back in 2002, we were working, building a home, and they were talking about smart homes, mm-hmm. right, that we had. But now the technology is so much that we're so connected. How has that changed for you in terms of building homes, in terms of connectivity? Have you seen advancements there for you?
So, you know, the biggest thing, one of the biggest questions I get is, tell me about the internet coming to the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. That's a deal breaker for people. If you don't have fast access to internet, they may not be able to do their remote job away from there. So, you know, Google Fiber, Spectrum, you know, so we've got a lot of places that have really good speed for internet. So that's key number one, is being someplace that has that access. You're not taking some sort of satellite that's, you know, dripping your internet to your house. 20 years ago, everybody wired their houses for smart homes. And what we find is that ties you into proprietary systems that may or may not become obsolete. And are they supported? Today, as long as you have fast bandwidth to the house and you have a hub system that allows distribution of the internet throughout your home, people are doing things wirelessly. That way they can pick and choose. They're not tied in. They may use Nest, or they may use Google, or they may use other devices, but they can choose, and they do it wirelessly, and it's, you know, plug and play. And so we're really seeing a lot more of making sure that you have the right bandwidth getting to the home and then be able to distribute it through the home, and then people adding what they want in the home. So a lot of flexibility there.
Well, you built some big homes.
Yes, sir.
And I know that one of the challenges can sometimes be, and I had to do this in a bigger home where I had to have two routers, you know, because I wanted to be on separate channels from what we had downstairs to upstairs doing what I was doing and those type of things. I guess I was curious, the wiring of these things becomes a much more of a challenge, I think.
It does, but you know, we have a partner, right? You know, I'm not going to say I'm an expert on this, so I have a partner. I call him in, and he advises us. And so a lot of times he'll put a router, you know, that connects to the modem, and then we'll hardwire in a couple places for a mesh network. So there'll be a piece up here and a piece down here and a piece over there that are hardwired into that router.
But
you get coverage of the entire house that way. So these mesh networks, the Orbeez, and there's a whole bunch of other brands. You can hardwire them in, so you're getting fast throughput, directly as fast as it would get from your router to the next piece of the mesh network out there. And then from there, it then goes out. You know, your network in your home is only as fast as the, you know, the bandwidth that it gets distributed from your router.
Sure.
So, we bring in people who are, you know, experts on that and ask them. And again, the customization factor, what is it you need? You tell us what you need, and we'll help you craft, you know, the right network for your home how you're going to live in your home. That's really the important part.
What are some of the other big trends that you've seen shift in 8 years?
Yeah. Everybody, I think, really enjoys having low utility bills.
Right.
And so we're seeing a lot more people wanting to insulate their roof with a foam roof insulation.
We did that. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of, you know, the story we did, and it's very simplified, is when you go out in the snow and in the wintertime, you put a hat on your head because you lose all the heat through your head, especially when you got a head like mine. So you got to have
that. I did not bring that up.
Come on now.
I didn't bring that up, by the way. That was all on you, man. I did not bring that up.
It was sitting there. It was going to happen. So I just, you know, take it as it is. But, you know, you lose the heat through your head, and your house is the exact same way. The hot air rises. And so having that roof deck on the top, The other thing, when you do a foam roof deck, you don't have the perforation for the soffits. And so from an insect standpoint, and then your attic is more climate controlled. It's within a few degrees of the main part of the house. So energy efficiency, the houses today that are built, you know, than they were 15 years ago, whether it's us or anybody, are so much more efficient. You know, the testing that goes on, you know, sealing around all the holes and stuff. We do a great job with that. You know, even things like the floor systems, it used to be, you know, kind of plywood floors. Right. You know, we use some of the most advanced floor systems now, glue them onto the joists, and then you screw them in. And, you know, I'm a big guy, and so when I bounce on the floor, I don't want to feel the floor bounce.
Yeah,
and
I know. Yeah, I get that.
You know, the old plywood floors are sort of like trampolines, right?
Yeah.
You know, so things like that. So some of the things are, you know, you just don't see, but the homes are built really, you know, better now.
Right.
And then the tall ceilings and things like that, that, you know, nobody wants to live in an 8-foot ceiling anymore. You know, your grandmother's house with the 8-foot ceilings was wonderful in its time, but those houses have, you know, the wiring in them, the insulation in them, the asbestos in them, all these things that, you know, when we do it. So, you know, we don't want to take down homes that still have good, useful lives ahead of them.
Right.
But some of these houses have seen their purpose fully utilized, and it's time for us to put a new house in there. So we do quite a few infills, especially in the downtown Raleigh marketplace. And people really do enjoy having a tight house, I guess that's the way I call it, a tight house.
So what about the trend? I hear this trend of green homes, right? How does that play a role?
You know, there's a little bit of marketing there.
Okay.
So, you know, take it for it is, you can put a seal and get these appliances, but it locks you into the, I think the codes and the requirements now for the homes. And if you tell your builder that, hey, I really want to do things above and beyond, you know, they can do it. You can foam insulate all the walls of the house. Now, what's the incremental cost versus the benefit you get? So there are sometimes when people start to do the real analysis of it, you know, they's like, wow, I'm going to spend this. It's a 15-year ROI before, you know, it makes sense.
Right.
So while it sounds good in theory, in practice, you know, you're driving the price up, and what's the return on it? So I think it's, you know, we try to make these trade-offs and talk to our part, you know, our customers about that. So a lot of people have ideas, and some people absolutely want it, in which case, great, we'll do it.
Right.
But, you know, there's a cost to all these things.
Right. So last thing, as we go along here, Pray to Homes.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And I know you got, so talk about, people, you know, I know people who live here, we're used to the Pray to Homes, but like you said, we have thousands of people who have moved here that may not be quite as aware of Pray to Homes. Talk about that and what you're doing there.
Yeah, so you know, the Raleigh is home to the Triangle HBA, Home Builders Association. And our Home Builders Association is very vibrant and strong. And it is the largest home builders association in the entire country.
Wow.
Yeah, and so you know, that means builders like me, builders on my team, we're all part of this community, and we're working on things that affect home building in this marketplace. And so great home builders. One of the biggest events they do each year is this Triangle Parade of Homes. And so this year, I think there are 157 homes in the parade at various price points and throughout the triangle. And these homes will be open for 3 weekends, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, starting at the end of October. The first Friday is judging day. So there's a group of judges that come in with a scorecard and they rate your house and they give out awards and recognize the best homes in each price point. So various price points. So these homes are traditionally staged and, you know, people put lots of fun things in them because this is a way for us to show off what we do. And it also gives us a chance to have conversations with people. Say, I love this house. Can you build it for me in a different location, or can you build something else for me in a different location? So the agents love it. They, you know, I was just talking with a group of agents, and they say they talk to more people, customers, in that 3 weekends than they do the rest of the year combined.
Wow.
So it's a great opportunity for the agents to meet lots of people. It's a great opportunity for home buyers. And home buyers are only a small portion of it. For a lot of people, I call it, they go parading. They, you know, they go out to brunch on Sunday, and then they go look at Parade of Homes in the afternoon. And not because they really want to buy it, but they think about their current home, and it maybe sparks something. Sometimes they're looking for just design ideas or paint colors, or, you know, they're going to renovate their home. And so a lot of people come out just to see, you know, what's happening, what's new, you know, what people are doing. And then there are others that are real, real buyers out there. So it's a great opportunity. 157 homes. Exeter is going to have 5 homes in the parade, ranging from $1.5 to $3.6 million.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we've done our time.
Oh, That was fast and easy, buddy.
Tell people how they get a hold of you.
Hey, if you want to reach us, exeterbuilding.com. I'm John Finan, and it's Jay Finan at exeterbuilding.com. But go to our website. All of our information is there, and we'd love to help you if you are in the need of a new custom home.
Awesome. You've been great.
Thank you.
Hey, folks, listen, you know what? You had a lot of choices. You chose us here at Real Estate Right Now, and we are really grateful. If you're watching us on YouTube, give us a thumbs up. Listening to us by podcast, give us a positive rating, like a nice 5-star rating. You know what? We thank you so much for doing that. Tell your friends, too, by the way. As I say to you every week all over the world, ciao, everybody.
Thank you.
Living.